Messages from the House.
February the 1st, 2013, from the House of Representatives. Message, third reading, pass, amended. Mr. President, the bill listed below pass the House on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. House Bill 103, Regulation of Firearm State Preemption. Ayes 53, no 6, excused 1. House Bill 104, Firearm Protection Act. Ayes 46, noes 13, excused 1. House Bill number 105, Citizen and Students Self-Defense Act. Ayes 46, noes 13, excused 1. House Bill number 132, Chiropractor Licensure Amendments. Ayes 48, noes 11, excused 1. House Bill number 212, Impact Assistance to Local Governments. Ayes 51, noes 8, excused 1. And House Bill number 216, Deadly Weapons in a Courtroom. Ayes 59, excused 1. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk.
Reports from standing committees.
February the 1st, 2013, Mr. President, your committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, to whom was referred House Bill 15, Engrossed Violent Injuries Reporting Requirements, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Anderson, 28, Senators Kraft, Nutting, Peterson, and Scott, Senator Scott, Chairman. February the 1st, 2013, Mr. President, your committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, to whom was referred House Bill 79, Collection of Unpaid Wages, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Anderson, 28, Senators Nutting, Peterson, and Scott. No, Senator Kraft, Senator Scott, Chairman.
While we're at bills on third reading, I guess. Missing some people. Senate File 113, third reading of the Senate file.
Senate File 113, Insurance Guaranteed Association Act Amendment, sponsored by Senator Johnson, and Act relating to insurance, be it enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
Any discussion on Senate File 113? Hearing none. Senate File 113 having been read three separate times, the question is, shall the bill pass? The chief clerk will call the roll.
Anderson, District 2.
Aye.
Anderson, District 28.
Aye.
Barnard.
I don't know.
Bebout.
Aye.
Excused.
Burns.
Aye.
Case. Christensen. Coe. Cooper. Kraft. Dockstader. Driscoll. Amrick. Esquibel. Geis. Hastert. Hicks. Hines. Johnson. Landon. Meyer. Nicholas. Nutting. Perkins.
Aye.
Peterson.
Aye.
Rothfuss.
Aye.
Schiffer.
Aye.
Scott.
Aye.
Von Platern.
Aye.
President Ross.
Aye. Senator Bebout.
Aye.
You're
an aye.
Barnard?
Aye.
Closing vote? Closing. Vote closed. 30 ayes.
Senate File 113, having received an affirmative vote of the majority of members elected to the Senate, Senate File 113 has passed the Senate. Senate File 118, third reading of Senate File.
Senate File 118, Eminent Domain 2, sponsored by Senator Driscoll, and Act relating to eminent domain, be it enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
We have some amendments. The reading clerk will read in third reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 118.
Senate File 118, third reading amendment number 1, page 2, line 11.
Mr. Vice President.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move third reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 118. Members of the Senate, I'll explain what the amendment does and try to give you some of the reasons why I bring this to you. If you look at the bill and go into the not only the page 211, but 16 and 18 as well, is what we do is we insert a public entity. And so, Mr. President, what this means with this entire bill would only apply if the condemnor is a public entity. And just for everyone's information, Mr. President, a public entity is defined in our statutes as means the state of Wyoming and its agencies, municipalities, counties, school districts, political subdivisions, and special districts. Mr. President, I remember a case called Kelo. Kelo versus the city of New London. And it was a case in 2005 that this particular community, municipality, actually said that they were going to have an eminent domain condemnation for its economic revitalization plan. This is very controversial. It ultimately went to the Supreme Court in a 5-4 decision that was upheld by the Supreme Court. And I just want to share with the Senate that one of the dissenting opinions, and the four dissenting justices were Justice O'Connor, Scalia, Thomas, and I believe Rehnquist. Mr. President, it says, writing the primary dissent, Justice O'Connor agreed that economic development takings violated the takings clause public use requirement, which he interpreted literally. She rejected the majority's view that the Constitution permits the transfer of private property to private developers so long as the public obtains some incidental benefit. As she asserted, that it was for the courts, not the legislative bodies, to determine if the use of eminent domain was constitutional. And, Mr. President, when I heard the debate on this and listening to the issue, it seemed to resolve mostly around a particular state agency. And I have to share with you that I've heard other concerns about how a particular agency would use somewhat intimidating tactics to secure private property with the use of the condemnation, in fact, actually go to court with the condemnation. So, Mr. President, that's why I bring this amendment to you. In some ways, you know, by not having the private sector, there's a good argument, well, why would you take the public entity out and leave the private sector in? And my response to that is this is a major bill. There's a lot of things in the bill that I think deserves further consideration and discussion, but at least if you look at the Kelo case, and what happens with public entities and the takings they have, I think that this just supports us to try to protect private property from those particular entities, using eminent domain as a tool to take away that private property for the public. So I would ask your support of this amendment.
Discussion on the amendment. Senator Driscoll.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Rising on to oppose this amendment. Not feeling quite like Hank Aaron right now, folks. We're going to take another swing at another amendment now. Good argument on the Kelo. Absolutely true. This bill addresses part of that. But it only addresses part of it. This addresses all the way across the abuses that happen using eminent domain as a threat. And that's what this bill does, is it stops eminent domain being used as a threat. Good full-price offers are being made. What's good for the goose is good for the gander. This is, I don't care if you're a pipeline company, an electric utility, or, as this color paper shows, guys in this color pickups, if you're abusing the law as far as eminent domain goes and using it as a threat, this stops that from happening. This makes sure that if there's a fair price offer, gets slid across the table for the final offer. You can start out with whatever offer you want. This bill doesn't start until you slide that final offer. And if it's not an honest offer, it literally makes it where it's a level playing field for private landowners versus be it a huge old entity with a lot of yellow pickups or a multinational corporation or just another corporation coming in to try to take unfair advantage of you. As long as you play by the rules, you follow 1, 2, and 3 in them at Bain and do it right, you're not going to be penalized. This bill makes it where you have to make a fair price offer or someone's going to come back and get even with you. That's really what it's about. This is a fairness bill. It's not about eminent domain, in truth. It's about making fair offers and holding people to their word. I encourage you to defeat this amendment and pass the bill.
Further discussion. Senator Burns.
Mr. President, on against the amendment, if I recall from the Kelo decision, the outrage expressed over the Kelo decision was the idea that a private entity could go and condemn somebody else's private property under eminent domain. Well, Wyoming's had that since its inception, and Wyoming's always had it originally because of the railroads and because of ditches. That's why Wyoming's always had that. And as I read this bill, this amendment to the bill, it would exempt those same private organizations, those that put in railroads, pipelines, power lines, and creeks from having, and ditches rather, from having to do the same thing that any of the public entities here would do. I don't understand from this amendment why we're exempting them from the same exactitude that the public entities should have when you're condemning somebody else's private property.
Senator Scott.
Mr. President, as I read this amendment, it asks us to make an important policy decision. And that is that will, in an eminent domain case, treat the public entities, primarily WIDOT, but for the highways, but there's others and possibly involved too, in a much more stringent manner than we treat private entities, and you just heard the litany of the ones that are likely to be involved. They're going to be treated in the current lesser manner. And Mr. President, that's an important policy decision, one we need to consider very carefully, and I would ask for the yeas and nays in the amendment.
Yeas and nays have been asked for. Senator Landon.
Thank you, Mr. President. I rise on the amendment, but also in a general way on the bill, and I wanted to just pick up on where my Natrona County colleague left off. I encourage you to defeat this amendment, and the reason is this. I really don't think we should be treating our public entities any differently than our private entities. And then we can get back on the bill and talk about some merits there. I have to fully disclose that I did sign on, but I want to, in relation to this amendment, I want to represent my position on the Transportation Committee, which is, I just don't think that we ought to treat that entity any differently than any other entity that would be condemning property out there. So on and against the amendment.
Further discussion on the amendment? Hearing none, the question is, shall third reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 118 pass? All those in favor say, ayes and nays were called for. Sorry. Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Anderson, District 2?
No.
Anderson, District 28?
Aye.
Barnard?
No.
Bebout?
Aye.
Burns?
No.
Case?
No.
Christensen?
No.
Coe?
Aye.
Cooper?
Aye.
Kraft?
No.
Dockstader?
Aye.
Driscoll?
No.
Amrick?
No.
Esquibel?
No.
Geis?
Aye.
Hastert? Hicks?
No.
Hines?
No.
Johnson?
No.
Landon?
No.
Meyer?
No.
Meyer?
No.
Nicholas?
No.
Nutting?
No.
Perkins?
Aye.
Peterson?
Aye.
Rothfuss?
No.
Schiffer?
No.
Scott?
No.
Bonflaturn?
Aye.
President Ross?
Aye.
No.
Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. 9 ayes, 21 noes.
Third reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 118 has failed to pass. Chief Clerk, or the reading clerk will read in third reading amendment number 2 to Senate File 118.
Senate File 118, third reading amendment number 2, page 2, line 16.
Senator Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is just pretty simple. When you move it. I would move for passage of this amendment. Thank you very much, Mr. President. When you go to page 2, line 16, we did a committee amendment that actually was pretty unclear, and this deletes less and inserts more, and that's in, with the 10% variance that's allowed. The way it read before, it really doesn't read in a correct manner. It just says that it has to be more than 10% in order for it to kick in. It actually makes it where it reads and tracks the way it should. I would move that you go ahead and vote aye on this.
Question's been called for. All those in favor of third reading amendment number 2 to Senate File 118, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That amendment's been adopted. We are back on the bill. Any discussion on the bill? Senator Landon.
Thank you, Mr. President. Real quickly, just in the interest of further disclosure, you know, sometimes you sign on and a bill looks okay, and then you learn lots of things. And I just wanted to let my fellow senators know that I have indeed learned quite a bit about this bill. And I've already spoken with the sponsor. We've had some good visits about it. But again, serving on your transportation committee, I've listened, and I'm just a little bit concerned that we're tipping the balance a little bit too far with this bill. I think it's going to have some consequences that will reverberate back into our budgeting down here, and for that reason, you know, I'm going to be opposing the bill. So thank you, Mr. President.
Mr. Vice President.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. President. I, too, would urge caution. This is a sort of a major decision we're making, and usually a bill with this type of impact would be something went through the committee process. And we talked about a previous bill that dealt with some bonding issues that went through committee process and was in one body, didn't fare very well, and we've had a lot of discussion about that, and you can see some of the confusion we had. So, you know, I just would ask you to be very cautious about your vote on this bill.
Further discussion, Senator Emmerich.
Thank you, Mr. President. As my good colleague from Natrona County said, at first blush, this looked pretty cute. But I also have some problems. I haven't spoken to the sponsor, and I don't wish to single out a single profession, but I can see this to be a retirement fund for our legal friends. And I would urge caution. I think it needs to be thought about. I think it needs to be discussed. I think it's a little too early to pass this one.
Further discussion, Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I think we have had a great deal of discussion, a lot of amendments to this bill in committee, and a great deal of discussion on the floor. And I think it really comes down to asking yourself, are people being treated right when their property is taken away from them? When their property is taken away from them. And that's what this bill does. This sets out what happens when something's yours and it's taken from you. Now, that's important. When somebody takes your property, what are you going to get back from it? Is it going to be something that's fair? And we've outlined what was fair, and we've outlined what was not fair. And we've outlined the first thing you do, if you're dealing in good faith, you make a good faith offer. That good faith offer is defined. If you don't do it with 100%, if you go 110%, you know it's in that range. It's a good wide range. You've got a lot to work with to be fair to a person when you're taking their property.
Further discussion. Senator Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On and for the bill, Great points. Really, really appreciate the great senator from Goshen County what he said, because that's what this really is. This is about private property rights, and it's about being fairly compensated when something's being taken away from you without your will. And, you know, the worst feeling you can have in the world is being violated. And that's happening at times now with bad operators at Tenement Domain. There's been a lot of talk about what this bill does and doesn't do. This bill doesn't stop Tenement Domain. It doesn't wreck the process. As far as being a retirement plan for our good fellows that are by the dozens everywhere, they got retirement plans all the time. They live on them. That's, you know, the books are made for guys to pick them up and sue. And at any point in time, you can spend a lot of money on lawyers on anything. What this really does is says you're going to make a good faith effort. It also doesn't say that you automatically win a lawsuit because you disagree with somebody on the values. When they slide that offer across to you, before you're ever going to get into a lawsuit process, you're going to go find with your own methods what the best price value is of what you have. That's probably going to mean a second appraisal. You're probably going to show it to them because you're not trying to go to court. You're not trying to make your lawyers rich. I've certainly never tried to make a lawyer rich when I've hired him. Hope he does his job, and I hope he gets it done right. So you slide that offer across, you take a look at it, and if they can got through the brightness of their deal that the offers are 100% difference between them, they've got a chance to go ahead and make another offer without paying you for all your legal fees. How they're going to pay you for legal fees if they say, we're going to steamroll you and knock you down and take you out? That's what this stops. Doesn't stop anything from happening otherwise. And you can stop the process at any point. It doesn't say you get the legal fees if you don't prevail. It says only if you go to the end do you get your legal fees. So if you quit anywhere in between, which is what's going to happen, you didn't make a lawyer rich. You used a lawyer so you could be treated in a fair manner with your private property. I really urge you to pass this. It doesn't hurt a thing as long as you play fair.
Senator Anderson, 28.
Mr. Chairman, on and against the bill. We've been operating with eminent domain in this state for 180-some years or something like that, whatever it is. And we haven't ever had a deal where the lawyer got paid by the state or by the other party. Seemed to have worked all right. We will never have agreement on what the value of the property is. And I know where this comes from. The case in Casper was a friend of mine who thought his property was a lot more valuable than anybody else did, and thought he could prove a point, and he didn't. And he had a little trouble with the attorney, paying the attorney. And I know the attorney would like to have this in this bill. I think this is a, like the good senator from Cheyenne said, this is an attorney's bill, and a great one at that. Make that attorney and some others some money. So I would encourage you not to vote for this.
Mr. Jordy, floor leader.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, on and for the bill. And with respect to the Casper case, what the other side of the story they didn't tell you about is YDOT had an attorney here and spent about $250,000 on an outside lawyer to defend their position. The outside lawyer, you know, people want to criticize lawyers, but the lawyers come in and said, you know, what's the task and what's my budget? And what happens with companies and with YDOT, they don't look at the cost of acquisition of the property or the cost of fees. The cost of the fees are part of their operating expenses. They just go in as an operating expense, and they're not doing necessarily an analysis of whether it's profitable. You know, we give to the state agencies and we give to private folks the opportunity to step in the state's shoes and push people around and take their property. And one of the things that I've represented Fortune 500 companies, and I've represented folks that have had their properties taken. But I'll tell you what doesn't happen. It's not as though, for the companies, by the way, they come in and they might be putting a gas pipeline, they might be putting a railroad, or they might be putting some access road, or they'll put an overhead power line, and they're going to make money off that property for as long as it goes. They don't take a look at, you know, how much profit are we going to make on your land. The way the prophecies works is they walk in and they tell their attorneys and they say, how much do we have to pay for this? And remember, this is a one-time cost. They get to take your property for a one-time cost. They just pay it to the users of their product. They only have to pay for it once and they get it forever. Like building a building, your cheapest cost are your original acquisition costs, the one-time costs that just don't go on. And I've never seen anybody come in and said, you know, we're taking these people's properties, and we ought to make sure they're paid a fair price. And you know, it's not enough to say, well, they paid $100 an acre, because we know there's an adverse impact on the rest of their ranch. There's an impact. They can't sell it for as much later. They don't do that. They go to the attorneys and they say, we're going to lowball everybody, and your job is to get it for the lowest price, and don't worry about your fees because we'll build that into our operating costs. And the lawyers are simply doing what they are hired to do. And you're a landowner that you go in, and they're going to make an example of anybody that wants to fight hard, so that the balance of you say, you know, I know it's not, you know, my property is worth $20,000. Well, you want to go hire a lawyer and spend 10 grand, or do you want to take our 10 grand offer? What do you do? It's unfair, and it's unfair because we give them the power of the state, and we only require them to pay what is the fair market value, and we give very vague instructions to the court and everyone else. And we don't really say, by the way, we get to look at the lifetime impact on your ranch. And we don't look at how much money these other institutions make. And we impose on you the obligation to hire your own attorney, defend, and you take it out of your pocket, so there's no way for you to come whole. Absolutely no way to come whole. The more you fight to get your value, and I've seen guys come in and say, hey, it's a point. I've seen guys run a $300,000 to get their value, and the property might only be worth $200,000. Or then that might be the final award, but they made a point. Not everybody has the resources to do that. But over and over, what you're more likely to see is the guy that's got a taking. You know, I've seen them go down on hay fields or wheat fields, and they want to go right down the center. Well, you know, it's straighter for us. And they said, well, I can't run my pivots, I can't irrigate, you're going to be driving through my field and it's going to be forever. Doesn't make any difference. What did you pay for that place? Well, when I bought it, I paid, you know, $1,000 an acre. That's what you get.
15 seconds.
Thank you. On and for the bill.
Senator Barnard.
Mr. Chairman, what we've got here is kind of a David and Goliath bill. I really appreciate the senator from Albany County's account. I think he portrayed that in a very accurate manner. If you have a great big company or a large public entity come in and say, we're going to give you this for your land, and you said, I think it's worth more, like they said, the lawyers, the company, they have tremendous amount of resources. They have all kinds of lawyers. They can intimidate you into making a lowball offer. And if you keep fighting and fighting, it just costs more and more and more. We're trying to stop this for the little people. We're trying to make this an even playing field. We offered to give the people that may be lost in that a chance to not lose so much by having the 10% in there. I think there has been discussion on it. I hope you will pass this bill.
Senator Christensen.
Thank you, Mr. President. On and for the bill, if you remember back to the conditions of it, the standard is not 100%, it's 90%. They can be within 10%. And so if they come up with the right value and they've got shrewd people doing it, they can still give you only 90% of what the property is worth. And then if you're going to argue, then you're risking fees on top of that. So this isn't they're not getting steamrollered. There's still an opportunity to save some money, 10% if they want to on you. One of the frustrations, having been in worked with county and now state government for 28 years, is it's generally not a fair fight, because not only does a citizen, if they're going against government, they have to pay for their side of the fight, but they're partially paying for your side too. And it's very discouraging for the citizens to take that on.
We're starting to sound like the House of Representatives. Senator Hicks.
Mr. President.
Senator?
I hope that wasn't directed at me, Mr. President. That was at the body of the whole, I hope.
Yes.
I want to expound upon, I think the good senator from Albany County talked about the immediate and the long-term loss, but I want to talk about the other circumstance that happens, and this happens every day. I've dealt with this with landowners for over 10 years, and I'm going to describe a circumstance for you. It's not only the future loss of that. It's the future loss of a lot of your operation associated with regulatory takings. And let me tell you what happens, particularly in the checkerboard that runs all the way across Wyoming. Company comes in on your private surface, and they go through a condemnation project under eminent domain. But because that also crosses the BLM ground, they're required to collect all this information on your private surface. What's the quality of the sage-grouse habitat? Do you have any black-footed, suitable black-footed ferret habitat? What kind of cultural resources may lie out there? All that information's collected. All that stuff's collected, and then it goes into the public domain. So what happens now that we've got these pipelines, transmission lines, highways, and all this information was collected? Now, on your private surface, your property, and this sage-grouse goes on the list, who's under threat? Whose livelihood is jeopardized by this? Well, not the pipeline. But when they come out, because under Endangered Species Act, the taking of the habitat is considered a taking of the species. So you can't perform your normal agricultural operations anymore, because that information was collected under eminent domain and deposited it in the public forum, and now everybody in the world knows what you have on your private surface. So when these proceedings happen, not only is it the loss of productivity over the lifetime, a lot of times you're also subjected to future regulatory takings of your property. Level the playing field. That's what this bill does.
Thank you. For your second time, Senator Driscoll.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I'm not going to talk any more about the bill other than do a correction. And it was talked about this bill being brought about a specific public entity and a specific reason. That is not true. This bill is my bill. Had a lot of help from a lot of people. Got a lot of emails. We're kind of property virgins up where I'm at. We don't have much for intimate domain to happen. We got some highways and private roads. We had a pipeline came through last year. We had some interesting things happen, and I'm not going to beat them up. They're there, and they're part of our community. But we had some problems. That's why this bill's here. It's here because of things that have happened, not an instance. And it bothers me when a bill comes out to deal with one specific time. I've had help from the guy that bill was, that this was done. Surely wasn't the only reason. I'm going to tell you, this bill's here because of private property rights. What happens? I live on a ranch that can't afford to defend themselves. And it hurts. You're on the wrong side. It's a bad deal, guys. And not everybody can afford good lawyers. And when you get that middle offer, just like the good senator from Albany County said, sometimes you have to say, I'd love to fight. You're wrong. But I'll take it.
Question's been called. Senate File 118 having been read three separate times. Question is, shall the bill pass? The chief clerk will call the roll.
Anderson, District 2?
Aye.
Anderson, District 28?
No.
Barnard?
Aye.
Bebout?
No.
Burns?
Aye.
Case?
Aye.
Christensen?
Aye.
Coe?
No.
Cooper?
No.
Kraft?
Aye.
Dockstader? Driscoll?
Aye.
Emmerich?
No.
Esquibel?
No.
Geist?
No.
Hastert?
Aye.
Hicks?
Aye.
Hines?
Aye.
Johnson?
Aye.
Landon?
No.
Meyer?
Aye.
Nicholas?
Aye.
Nutting?
No.
Perkins?
No.
Peterson?
No.
Rothfuss?
Aye.
Schiffer? Scott? Bonflatern? President Ross?
Aye.
Closing vote? Closing. Vote closed. 17 ayes, 13 noes.
Senate File 118, having received the affirmative vote of the majority members elected to the Senate, Senate File 118 has passed the Senate. Senate File 130, third reading of the Senate File.
Senate File 130, Professional Licensing Military, sponsored by Senator Landon, and Act Relating to Professions and Occupations. Be it enacted by the Legislature of the State of Wyoming.
Senate File 130, any discussion? Hearing none. Senate File 130, having been read three separate times, the question is, shall the bill pass? The Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Anderson, District 2?
Aye.
Anderson, District 28?
Aye.
Barnard?
Aye.
Bebout?
Aye.
Burns?
Aye.
Case?
No.
Christensen?
Aye.
Coe?
Aye.
Cooper?
Aye.
Kraft?
Aye.
Dockstetter?
Aye.
Driscoll?
Aye.
Amrick?
Aye.
Esquibel?
Aye.
Geis?
Aye.
Hastert? Hicks,
aye.
Hines,
aye.
Johnson,
aye.
Landon,
aye.
Meyer,
aye.
Nicholas,
aye.
Nutting,
aye.
Perkins,
aye.
Peterson,
aye.
Rothfuss,
aye.
Schiffer,
aye.
Scott,
aye.
Bonflatern,
aye.
President Ross.
Aye.
Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. 29 ayes, 1 no.
Senate File 130, having received the affirmative vote of the majority of members elected to the Senate, Senate File 130 has passed the Senate. Senate File 135, third reading of the Senate File.
Senate File 135, Assisted Living Facilities Regulation, sponsored by Senator Scott, an act relating to regulation of health care facilities. Be it enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
We have an amendment. Third reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 135. The reading clerk will read it in.
Senate File 135, third reading amendment number 1, page 1, line 5.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, all in all, I think this is an interesting piece of legislation that I think will do a lot. What the sponsor suggested is that we're going to move some folks out of the nursing homes and into assisted living at a lower standard of care, but a higher standard of care than what is currently exists in most assisted living centers. So, Mr. President, what this amendment does is go in and to the extent authorized by the federal Medicaid law and regulations, the Department of Health shall provide for the differential reimbursement of assisted living facilities to reflect enhanced services provided pursuant to this subsection. It goes on to say that the department shall apply to the Center of Medicare and Medicaid Services to the United States Department of Health and Human Services for an amendment to the state Medicaid plan as necessary to implement this paragraph. Mr. President, I thought, what are the unintended consequences if we move forward with this? And to me, it seemed like if you have assisted living centers that are at a lower level right now, and you add in enhanced services, they're like assisted living centers plus. And if there isn't a differentiation between that pricing level in the marketplace, then essentially everything is going to move up to assisted living plus. And the money that we would save with the folks not being in the nursing homes would be partially eaten up or maybe totally eaten up by rising the standard of care in all assisted living facilities. So I felt that we needed to have that differential pricing mechanism. This just goes into the part of where there's a differential pricing mechanism in the reimbursement with the Medicaid program. If I had a fourth reading, I'd probably go in there and make it clearer that they would have to charge a different price, Mr. President, because without that difference, you're going to raise care in all assisted living. You're not going to allow a lower price option which is available today. And so you make everybody to a higher level, everybody's price goes up, and you lose the savings that you have for the nursing home transfer patients. And so, Mr. President, this is just a small part of it. It's just the Medicaid part of it. Doesn't deal with it, with the private market part of it, which I really need to get to at some point in time. I think we need to. Otherwise, we are going to have that situation where we're essentially going to end up with assisted living plus centers everywhere. And that's going to be at a higher price to the whole system, and we're not going to have the savings that we think we're going to gain, or at least to the extent we think they're going to gain in the nursing home Medicaid arena. So, Mr. President, it's not a perfect amendment, but I think it goes more or less in the right direction, and I ask for a favorable consideration.
Discussion, Senator Scott.
Well, Mr. President, on and against the amendment. It's a good deal less than a perfect amendment. Mr. President, seriously, remember what this bill is doing. What it's doing is loosening up our very strict all-or-nothing regulations so that an assisted living may do some very simple, very sensible things to help its residents. They can change a catheter bag. They can change a Band-Aid on a wound. They can deal with somebody who has occasional, and that's the language now, occasional incontinence. This is not going to be a big expense item for assisted living. I think it's going to cause them to change their price 1 cent. And they're going to save some money because we're getting rid of an impossible regulation in the dietary area. Mr. President, and recall that in Medicaid, we do not pay the room and board part of assisted living. We do when you get over to the nursing home. So this is going to enable residents to stay in a less restrictive environment for longer, save the state significant money. The amendment, Mr. President, says the department shall apply. Mr. President, there's no need to do that. We've already got the waiver for assisted livings. If expenses change any at all, it'll be within the waiver. If the feds have some regulation that's impossible, the bill says, okay, we'll have two sets of regulations, one for those that are Medicaid and one those without. Mr. President, the real problem with this amendment is the department shall apply, and it is simply, flatly unnecessary, and I would urge its defeat.
Further discussion? Question's been called. All those in favor of... Sorry, Senator Meyer.
And directly to the point that the good senator alluded to in his discussion of the amendment, that they're going to increase all of the services and it's not going to cost one more cent. Well, Mr. Chairman, if you're a person going into assisted living and you have the option of going into a facility that doesn't have the enhanced services or going to a facility that does have the enhanced services, you're going to pick the enhanced services if it's the same price. So essentially what we're going to do with this bill is, and the amendment is, it goes to it to address it somewhat, although not wholly. Essentially what we're going to have is that we're going to have all assisted living facilities providing more enhanced services. And let's take, for example, let's say you have 20% of the folks that are in a nursing home that could go into an assisted living facility. Well, that's fine. You're going to save money on that 20%. But it's going to cost you on the 80% because of the enhanced services that the rest of the assisted living facilities are going to have to provide to be competitive in the marketplace. And so, Mr. President, it looks like it's a good deal because you're saving on one hand, but folks, you're taking money out of the pocket on the other hand.
Question's been called. All those in favor of third reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 135, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
That amendment's failed. Back on the bill. Is there any further discussion on Senate File 135? Senate File 135, having been read three separate times, the question is, shall the bill pass? The Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Anderson District 2?
Aye.
Anderson District 28?
Aye.
Barnard?
Aye.
Bebout?
Aye.
Burns?
Aye.
Case?
Aye.
Christensen?
Aye.
Coe?
Aye.
Cooper?
Aye.
Kraft?
Aye.
Dockstader?
Aye.
Driscoll?
Aye.
Amrick?
Aye.
Esquibel?
Aye.
Geis?
No.
Hastert?
Aye.
Hicks?
Aye.
Hines?
No.
Johnson?
Aye.
Landon?
Aye.
Meyer?
No.
Nicholas?
No.
Nutting?
Aye.
Perkins?
Aye.
Peterson?
Aye.
Rothfuss?
Aye.
Schiffer?
Aye.
Scott?
Aye.
Von Flatern?
Aye.
President Ross?
Aye.
Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. 26 ayes, 4 noes.
Senate File 135, having received the affirmative vote of the majority members elected to the Senate, Senate File 135 has passed the Senate. Now, Mr. Majority Floor Leader, we're at that order of business, consideration of bills on general file.
Finally, I move that we move the Senate resolve itself into committee of the whole, and you see the bills up. We're not going to leave till they're done.
No, all the Senate bills.
You've read the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion's carried. Senator Perkins.
Committee of the Whole will now come to order. Well, the first bill for our consideration is Senate File 142. Will the reading clerk please read the bill?
Senate File 142, Utilities Rate Making, sponsored by Senator Case, an act relating to utilities. It was referred to Committee Number 7. Corporation's Election Political Subdivision reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Case, Hines, Johnson, Nutting, and Scott. Senator Hines, Chairman.
Heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Hines?
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it does so with a do pass recommendation on Senate File 142. There is a amendment, and I'll move the amendment and yield to Senator Case to explain the bill and the amendment.
Okay, well, the reading clerk, you want to read the amendment in, please?
Senate File 142, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 2, line 6.
Thank you. Senator Case.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move that amendment again since it wasn't read in yet. So that's the Standing Committee Amendment 1 to Senate File 142. Mr. Chairman, this bill deals with utility rate making. It's specifically in the area of electric utility rates. And, Mr. Chairman, the purpose of this bill is to make sure that we don't pay too much for renewable energy in our rates. And, Mr. Chairman, by way of background, there was a law passed in 1978. It was called the PURPA, and the purpose of that law was to require utilities to pay and purchase renewable energy. And so if you were a facility that came under this act, you were called a qualified facility. And deal like solar and wind and actually some efficient gas-fired power plants are deemed to be qualified facilities. There is a size restriction, Mr. Chairman. And the key issue here is that under PURPA, the federal law, qualified facilities have a right to have the utility buy their power, but the rate for that power comes from what the avoided cost that the utility incurs. And by avoided cost, Mr. Chairman, I mean the cost that the utility otherwise would have purchased. And I'll give you a quick example. If the utility has a system and they're looking at
a new addition to power. It may be that the cheapest power plant that they can build would be a gas-fired turbine, Mr. Chairman. Let's make up some numbers and say that that gas-fired turbine produces electricity at 5 cents. If that is their avoided cost, Mr. Chairman, that means when the wind developer or the solar developer or someone else comes in and says, we're ready to sell you power, we know you need it, you have to give us the PURPA rate or the qualifying facility rate, that rate can be no higher than the alternative cost of the utility generating its own power or the 5 cents I just mentioned, Mr. Chairman. Well, in Wyoming, it got a little bit unclear, and this bill makes it perfectly clear that we want to give the same rate, and there is only one rate that's based on the avoided cost of the utility, Mr. Chairman. That's all this does. It's an equal playing field kind of rate. It will encourage that we only offer one price, the utility's own avoided cost, to these qualifying facilities, Mr. Chairman. And, Mr. Chairman, the reason there's a long amendment, it basically substitutes the language in the bill. It's because all the 900-pound gorillas sat around for about 3 days working on the language, and that language is directly from what they agreed to. It represents the current practice and the requirements of the federal law. So it's kind of a mouthful, Mr. Chairman, but it says the cost of a qualifying facility situated within Wyoming and greater than 10 megawatts in size shall not be included in rates, and a utility shall not be required to enter into transaction to purchase energy or capacity from such a facility unless the commission determines the cost of the energy or capacity or both of such transaction are determined by the commission to be less than or equal to the utility's avoided cost. Less than or equal to that next cheapest price power. That's the key part, Mr. Chairman. Considering the cost of energy or capacity from all other available generation sources. And this subsection shall not be interpreted in a manner inconsistent with the requirements of applicable federal statutes and regulations. That's the amendment, Mr. Chairman. That's also the bill if we approve the amendment. Be happy to answer any questions.
All right, thank you. Let's go to Senator Schiffer.
Mr. Chairman, thank you, and I rise in favor of the amendment and understand that this was the agreement. And the real issues here is that narrows this application to what they call a qualifying facility. That's greater than 10 megawatts and less than 80. So it doesn't apply to everything across the board. Excuse me. You've got to fit in that category. And then if you go out and the utility has to buy that, then it sets a single price for what is the going to be the cost. And really what that does is it means that us as consumers get some protection, that we don't have one cost for one type of the electricity is all the same, but one generation type as compared to another. So it gives us, at least as consumers, at least some solid ground to where this will be considered in a reasonable manner. I urge your support for this amendment.
Thanks, Senator Schiffer. Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a few questions. One is what, if you're a non-qualifying facility, do you still have the opportunity to sell that energy to a utility? Then the language down there on, I think, around 1450 about concerning the cost of energy or capacity from all other available generation sources. There's a lot in that sentence. I'm just wondering, all other generation sources, let's say you've got coal at 2.5, your gas at 5, and wind or another one at 10, and the utility that they want to sell to has all of those different generating sources there, but they have no more capacity and they need capacity. So now, is it the average of all of those different things that the utility has? Is that the avoided cost? Because you figure all of the generation capacities, but if they have no more capacity in their system, does that say that the first guy to offer them capacity, they have to pay the avoided cost of the of wind if it's wind or gas if it's gas? And so there's I'm just trying to figure out what those, actually the federal statutes and rules, I think that's the fallback position. So I'm wondering what that fallback position is, how they handle that if you have a utility and all that mix. Then if you are a wind generator, if you've got five windmills and it's 9.5 megawatts and you're under, but is it per windmill? Is it if you've got 100 mills, do you take all the mills, put them together? Can you split three of them off or four of them off and market it in packages of three or four so you're underneath this and get around the regulations? Just kind of wondering how this is actually going to work in the real world on the ground.
Go to Senator Flater.
Just curious, a couple questions. One is, why is it situated within Wyoming? Why is that specified? I don't understand a lot about this, but I'm just trying to figure out why it specifies within Wyoming. And then, is there any all other available generation sources? So is this going to capture something unintended in the group? I really don't know enough about this, but a couple of questions for you.
One more, and we'll come back to you, Senator Case. Senator Rothfuss.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I too have a question about just how this would work. And the question I have is regarding the need for an increase in system capacity and whether this has any effect on that. And what I'm getting at, Mr. Chairman, is the concept where obviously the state of Wyoming grows at around a 1% per year, but energy demand from other states that our power producers may be addressing may grow more quickly. Are we, under this language, going to be forced to also contribute to new builds to make up for what I'll call foreign demand, out-of-state demand? Or would we only be subject to increases in demand and therefore the corresponding power purchase necessary within our state under this, based on our growth? Have been clear.
Thank you, Senator Rothfuss. We're going to go back to Senator Case before we get too far out in front of the sponsor on this.
Let him pile on, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Except for the challenge. Thank you, Senator Case.
Mr. Chairman, thank you very much. Starting with the good senator from Goshen County, who's gone. back to the good senator from Albany County. Senator, there is an issue in Wyoming that we are in an interconnected system, especially with the largest company. But that doesn't have anything to do with this bill. But it is true, and it's a subject for a different day, is that when there's demand that grows on the system and common facilities are needed within, like major transmission, we pay an allocated share of that. It's about 16%. That's a function of an agreement that that has been entered into with respect to the states on that system. That has nothing to do with that bill. It is a fight for another day, and it's a fight that could possibly be held over at the Public Service Commission the next time they enter into an agreement. This is in regards to the question was, why is it about facilities located in Wyoming? We're talking about relatively small facilities, greater than 10, less than 80 megawatts. So, it's significant but relatively small, located in Wyoming. They're called qualifying facilities. And if the facility is located in Wyoming, then PURPA has – the federal law requires that these renewables be that the Public Service Commission have a tariff for buying these renewable energies. The question is, what price for that tariff? We're saying that price has to be the best available price, the best possible price. The good senator from Goshen County, who his question, I'm sure he is listening, his question was about whether you look at the total mix of your existing plant. And it's true, utilities have all sorts of plants. You're going to have a coal plant. There's coal plants that are magnificently cheap. They're like 3 cents, possibly. And you have gas plants. You have hydro, which the marginal cost of hydro might be almost zero. But the problem is, that's not the next plant you're going to build. And qualifying facilities, according to the federal law, are paid the price of the next plant that you're going to develop and bring online. That's the key to the whole thing. It's an incremental cost concept. Unfortunately, it doesn't have anything to do with what you have in your mix. And the real problem is that we're not building coal plants. I wish that was the incremental cost. And I think I'd love to see it back on the table. Really, the incremental cost plants now, the ones that can most realistically be brought in, are gas turbines at this time. So that's sort of setting the standard. And the commission has set the standard based on a gas-fired turbine rate for these qualifying facilities. Except for there's a little problem. They didn't set the same rate for wind power. And that's, you know, when the PURPA regulations clearly say you're supposed to have the same rate. And that's the purpose of this bill. This good senator from Campbell County, you asked the question about situated in Wyoming, and these are about plants situated in Wyoming. The last thing the good senator from Goshen County asked about was, what about larger facilities? And larger facilities are going to, either the utilities are going to develop them directly on their own, or they will buy power from them, but that'll be a negotiated thing with approval by the Public Service Commission. It won't come under PURPA, and excuse me, it won't be a qualifying facility and apply for this rate. I hope that helps. I can go for sit down and rest up, and maybe you can hit me again, Mr. Chairman.
Get your breath. I don't think you're done yet. Senator Anderson, 28.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Excuse me, I'm sorry. Senator Anderson, 2.
I'm sorry.
No, it's Senator, you're 2, right?
I'm 2.
Senator, you were up first, sir, Senator Anderson.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I listened very, very carefully to this because it is a complicated thing under the surface. And as I look at a bill like this, this is a bit of a pig in a poke. And by a pig in a poke, I mean that this thing is laden with not only unintended consequences, but unimagined consequences. And I think this somewhat relates to the question that was asked by the good senator from the Gillette area. First of all, just let it be known, I know the true genesis of this bill, and I probably won't go into a lot of detail. The true genesis of this bill surrounds a project in my district. It's a small wind project, 2 small wind projects would fall under this as a qualified project. That project went through strict scrutiny with the industrial siting process, contested, went all the way through that process, and then given opposition, went all the way through the court system and just recently came out through the Supreme Court system with a ruling in favor of those people in the project. Well, as the final attempt in order to delay that project, you see the bill before you. And that's all fair. That's all fair. I can accept that. That's part of the process, and I'm not suggesting any kind of impropriety or whatever. That's all fair. The most significant aspect of that is not the loss of a small project in a central district. It's a loss of an opportunity for economic development in Wyoming. And that's what gets me to the idea that this thing is a pig and a poke in regard to Wyoming's future possibilities. We've had a lot of conversation on this floor in regard to private property rights. A small project in my district is central. You know, I don't much care about wind one way or the other. I can see 30 generators out my window. They're now starting to bring projects into the county and that, but the point of it is, this is about private property rights as to whether or not an individual who lives on a 100-year-old ranch has the ability to come up with some form of income that will sustain him, his family, into another 100 years. That's partly what it's about. But more globally than that, what it's about is what are the income, economic development potentials of Wyoming in the future when we talk about conversion technologies. I'm not a scientist, but I also know, and I'll just read to you for a minute in regard to what qualified projects are, and a little bit of, if I can, in regard to what the federal government was trying to do in incentivizing things through this QF or qualified projects. First of all, it was used for the conservation of electric energy. That's noble. Increased efficiency and use of facilities and resources by electric utilities. That's noble. Equitable retail rates for electric consumers. That's noble. That's part of the process of what they're trying to change. Expeditious development of hydroelectric potential existing small dams. And finally, the conservation of natural gas. Natural gas, aha, something different. Conservation of natural gas while ensuring that the rates of natural gas consumers are equitable. What about planned projects just north of here, 40 miles, that would take natural gas and balance the load provided by wind and make it a balanced commodity that we can send to our neighbors to the west? Would what's being proposed not discourage the use of that, quote, potentially qualified project? If this project that I'm talking about, 40 miles north of us, were to take place, it would become the second largest consumer of natural gas in Wyoming. And not only what it would do to a hardship county in terms of jobs and economic development, but what would that do to the revenues of this state if we were to do that? This very bill would discourage that, if not stop that. Let me give you another example. Again, we talk a lot about conversion technologies. In many of these processes, and I'm, again, not a scientist, but in many of these processes where we convert gas to liquids, liquids to gas, there's a byproduct. Quite often, the byproduct is heat. Basic fundamental byproduct coming off heat is electricity. These projects are in the billions to construct, and we're trying to attract these things. University School of Energy Resources. We've given all kinds of resources to develop these projects. If we had a project that was somewhat dependent upon the generation of electricity from heat, that perhaps would be a qualified project. This bill that you're looking at, this amendment, would cast dispersions upon those projects. Mr. Chairman, I see the clock, and so I'm just going to say to you, and I like analogies. I use analogies a lot when I teach. But this bill appears to be a bit of, and we've talked about pesticides and herbicides and whatnot. This bill is directed at one small weed in the economic picture of Wyoming and my district. That weed being a small wind project. They want to extinguish that weed. And in the process of doing that, this will, in fact, sterilize the soil of any economic development opportunity in Wyoming in the future. When you open this poke, be aware of what you might find. Thank you.
Thanks, Senator Anderson. Senator Anderson, too? Nope. Go back, Senator Schiffer. Discretion can be the better part of valor. Senator Chairman, Schiffer.
I could defer to Senator Anderson, too, if he wants it. Mr. Chairman, I believe the pig got out of the poke and went bump in the night. We're hearing that bump that's causing all sorts of reactions when we're trying to sleep. Mr. Chairman, let's see what we actually have here. Remember that a qualifying facility is greater than 10 and less than 80. It's not these great big projects that were referred to 40 miles up the road or any of those. That's not what it is. What this bill does, and what the agreement between the parties that were involved in the unnamed project north of here agreed to, is how are we going to come into compliance with the PURPA legislation. And that's the federal law. We've got to be in compliance with it. With the dual rates, we were not in compliance with it. And so what this bill does is trying to get us in compliance with it and also to remain, to make sure we get just and reasonable rates to our consumers. It seems to me that sometimes the consumer is lost in all this. And what we're trying to do is say, all right, you got to price the energy. The federal government says you got to buy it. But when you price it, it's got to be according to what the cost is in the next facility. It doesn't matter. It could be gas-fired. That's probably, I agree, most likely what's going to happen, or at least using some gas, because it's very economical right now. And if you marry it up with wind, as is proposed north of here, maybe you get the best of both worlds, and I'm all for that. But that's probably where the next pricing is going to be. We all, actually, I think we all want that to happen. It provides a market for our gas. This in no way impairs any of those kind of things. This is just applying to the qualifying facilities. And it, as I said, it does allow at least some protection for us as ratepayers when we have to buy that electricity. And remember, you don't get a choice where you buy your electricity. You buy it from whoever provides you service in your area. And if you happen to live in an area that's licensed to a high-priced outfit, that's just tough. You pay it anyway. And so let's understand who we're trying to get to in this deal. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Schiffer. Senator Meyer, and then we'll go back to Senator Case.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, I can see where a lot of ways a company could game this. You know, we've got a little 50,000 low-pressure hydro thing that's in water development. A utility, if they could say, well, that's my next project. And so the avoided cost would go down to about a penny and a quarter. You know, so, you know, there's some ways that this thing can be gamed that I'm really not comfortable with right now. I think if this moves forward, I think we're going to have to really, really discuss and tighten this thing up quite a little bit, Mr. Chairman. But I do have a question, and I was listening, but I didn't hear the answer to one of my questions, was if you're less than the 10 megawatts and you've got wind power and it's 10 cents a unit and the avoided cost is determined to be 5, but you're less than 10, what do you get the charge for that? Would be a question for the non-qualifying ones. I think now it's still an avoided cost, but I don't know. And then, to me, this does seem like you're going to be really limiting any future wind development in the state at all. It's almost like you're going to shut the spigot off entirely, because I don't see any reason for a current utility to put in a windmill, because that would drive up their avoided, their next project. That'd be it. That would drive that avoided cost rate through the roof. So that just seems to me like this just stops wind energy almost dead in its tracks. But I can't think of a way where wind energy would even survive under this scenario. So tell me where I'm wrong on it and give me some comfort.
I was around when the original PURPA Act was established, and there was a piece of the original PURPA Act that happened at the same time as something another law at the federal level. And it was called the Fuel Use Act, and it was about the time when we were having a great shortage of natural gas, Mr. President, and so there was an effort to conserve natural gas. That is no longer at all part of the arrangement. Gas facilities absolutely can qualify as be a qualifying facility. But most of the time, they might be bigger, big gas turbines bigger than these facilities. And if they are the marginal cost of what the system has to bring online, they are going to be what they are, Mr. Chairman. They will define the margin. And that's probably what's going to happen. You're going to find that those large gas facilities are the cheapest thing you can bring online effectively now. So, yes, they tend to move towards being the avoided cost. And that is the cost that you provide to these other facilities. And there is nothing in this that discourages gas. It, in fact, encourages it. Thank God that it does, because we would rather have contracts with, that probably pay taxes in Wyoming, use Wyoming gas, and we even get severance off of that. Now, wind is just on an equal footing with this, as would be solar, as would be everything else. That equal footing isn't something I made up. That's in federal law. And that's what the commission wants to apply. But they did give a little kicker for wind, and it is true. They describe it in their order as a proposed modification. And it says the proposed modification, which provides that pricing for wind QFs will be based on a wind proxy, is an important component of the agreement that will provide a significant benefit to the wind industry. And the Commission finds that continued use of this methodology is reasonable and should be adopted on a permanent basis. Well, that's the problem. It's not reasonable, it doesn't follow the federal law, and it doesn't make sure that consumers get the best possible deal. And in fact, what that does is discourage gas when gas should be encouraged. Now, this is not about discouraging anything in Wyoming. It's about following the federal law, following PURPA, that if you're going to have a PURPA project, you get paid the rate. We don't have a special rate. We don't make up our own rules. We follow the law. The Commission has agreed with this language. It's complicated because it's what they said they do. The biggest utility in the state agreed with this language because they said this is what they do, and they all want to agree and be on the same page. That was the testimony in the committee. There is no way that the marginal cost to the next incremental major project is going to be a small hydro facility with almost no energy cost. Unfortunately, it doesn't exist that way. It's a big proceeding. It's called the avoided cost proceeding, where they go in there and they have a thing called a resource plan. I can't remember. There's another acronym to it, where they list out all their planned additions to capacity for the next foreseeable future, years and years and years ahead. And that's where they decide, in 5 years, we're going to have to build this plant. In 6 years, we'll have to build this plant. That's where the bottom comes out, what those plants would be. And if you could avoid building them, that's what you'll pay anybody that's a qualifying facility that'll come up and sell you power. So even if solar costs 10 cents a megawatt hour, you still, as a consumer, only pay the avoided cost that the utility would have had to make anyway. That's why this is very consumer-friendly. It's very good for Wyoming gas. It's very good for Wyoming industry. And, yes, it makes sure that there's one rate that every technology, solar, wind, natural gas with the recovery of waste heat, all stand on the same footings as qualifying facilities. That's exactly what we're trying to do. That's why this bill's here, and everybody agrees that this is the right thing.
Are you ready for the question? No, we're not. Senator Scott.
Chairman, just want to make sure I understand the scope of this bill. Am I right in thinking that what we're talking about, that we're not talking about facilities that the utility company itself builds, that we're talking only about facilities that are built by other people that are in this 10 to 80 megawatt range, that the federal law forces the utility to buy, and we get to say what the avoided cost formula that's used is? And, Mr. Chairman, am I right in thinking if it's larger facilities than that, then it's a negotiation between the utility and the people who are building the facility?
Senator Anderson, you do want to weigh in.
Mr. Chairman, I've recovered. The 10-megawatt plant is really a small plant. That doesn't amount to much. Like somebody pointed out, that's about five windmills. A lot of natural gas plants can produce that. A lot of diesel engines can produce 10 megawatts, so I don't understand that. But the question I have is, I keep hearing 10 to 80. I'm looking here. I'm looking in the statutes. I see this saying 10 megawatts in size, and I don't know where the 10 to 80 comes into this discussion.
Thank you, Senator Anderson, too. Are we ready for the question? Senator Meyer.
Question. You know, there's a big state out to the west of us there that uses some of our energy from time to time. And I think they have a consumer idea that if you want green energy, you can afford to pay more for it. And so I guess you can sign up for green energy. Energy is energy, electrons are electrons, but they've got these folks believing that they can check the box for green energy and spend twice as much. My question is, as we're exporting Wyoming energy, do the folks that are providing green energy in Wyoming to the grid, solar or wind, Did they get the benefit of this guy out in the western state checking the box saying they want green energy and part of our energy mix goes out there? Or where does that profit go to? Does it just go to the utility that's paying the lesser avoided costs?
Senator Schiffer.
I'll answer the easy question. Well, I guess a couple. Those little outfits, remember we had a bill, that net metering rate deal, that's for the little bitty ones, and that's what they do. They make an agreement. In terms of the green energy, Mr. Chairman, I'd suggest if my colleague from the north of here lived on the same things that those folks live on, he'd know which electrons were green and which ones, because they can see that stuff. It's built into their diet, whatever. But, yeah, they do that out there.
Thank you, Senator Schiffer. Ready for the question?
You want to take a check from me?
All those in favor of Senator Case's motion that the Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 142, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
The amendment has passed. Senator Hester.
I privilege
If you would wait, I think we've done the bill.
Question.
Question on the bill. All those in favor of Senator Hines' motion with the Committee of the Whole Rights Report to do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 142, say aye.
Aye.
Suppose no?
No.
Senate File 142 has passed Committee of the Whole. Next bill, let's see, Senator Hastert.
Chairman, can I have privilege of the floor?
You may, Senator Hastert.
Members of the Senate, up here in the gallery, we have a group that has always been near and dear to me. It's the Board for the Wyoming Association of Career and Technical Education. From Sweetwater, Crook, Campbell, Goshen, Converse, Natrona, Sheridan, Albany, Niobrara, and Laramie counties. I'd like you to welcome them to the Senate.
Welcome to the Wyoming Senate. We hope you enjoy your day at the legislature. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 153. Will the reading clerk please read the bill?
Senate File Number 153, Unemployment Compensation Direct Sales, sponsored by Senator Landon, and Act Relating to Unemployment Insurance. It was referred to Committee Number 7, Corporation Lex and Political Subdivision. Forks back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Case, Hines, Johnson, Nutting, and Scott. Senator Case, Chairman.
Heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Case?
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a do pass recommendation on Senate File 153. There is a standing committee amendment. I'd ask it be read in at this time.
Marine Clerk, please read the amendment.
Senate File 153, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 1, line 2.
Senator Case.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I'd move Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 153 for an explanation of the bill and to handle the amendment. I would yield to the not quite so who used to be in the newspaper business.
Thank you, Senator Case. Senator Landon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Didn't we all? Thanks to the good chairman in the corner. Fellow senators, this is a bill that comes to us that arose out of a dispute that occurred between our newspapers out there across Wyoming and our Department of Workforce Services. Fellow senators, under Wyoming law, all of those newspaper carriers who deliver your newspaper to you every morning who are under the age of 18 are exempted from unemployment insurance. And so their newspaper doesn't have to pay unemployment insurance for them. That's under Wyoming law. Under federal law, under the U.S. tax codes, back in 1996, all newspaper carriers were exempted. And so what this bill attempts to do is to bring our statutes in compliance with federal rules. Now, I will track in the amendment, Mr. Chairman, here in a moment, but I know it's going to surprise you to learn that When we got to looking at federal rules under newspaper carriers, who are one of the exempted classes under federal rule, there are two different rules back there. There's the IRS code, and then there's the federal unemployment tax code. Well, the bill, as you see it, contains language of both. And what we're going to do with the Standing Committee Amendment is eliminate some of that language with the great help of our Corporations Committee. I really appreciate the work they did in committee to help to arrive at language that I think you'll like. It merely pulls in the United States tax code language, and that's going to be it. We'll eliminate the paragraph on page 2, and that's the way the bill is going to stand. Once again, fellow senators, this bill goes into our unemployment exemptions. We have several demographics that we exempt, under 18 years of age, as I pointed out. We also exempt individuals who work for their parents, for example. This would simply add some additional language under paragraph 4, under 27.3.108, and you'll see that at the bottom of page 1, which that's where we track in the language, which allows those newspaper carriers above the age of 18 years old to be exempted under our statutes. Now, if I might, Mr. Chairman, I'll move real quickly to the Standing Committee Amendment.
Please do. We are on the amendment.
And what we're doing with this amendment, fellow senators, is that we are going to track in language on page 1, which will allow us essentially to eliminate paragraph C on page 2. Paragraph C is the federal unemployment tax language that our Corporations Committee believes does not need to be in there. We're going to stick with the language out of the United States IRS code, and that is paragraph A and B. And Mr. Chairman, I think that language tracks in just fine. I'd be glad to answer any questions. Otherwise, I would call for question on the Standing Committee Amendment.
We're on the Standing Committee Amendment. Are there questions? Are ready for the question? All's in favor of Senator Case's motion on Standing Committee Amendment number 1 to House Senate File 15, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The amendment has passed. We're back on the bill. Senator Landon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Did you say Senate File 15 or 153?
153.
Okay,
Senate File 153. The amendment is passed. We're back on the bill. Senator Landon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think that's pretty much an encapsulated look at this bill. We're going to help our newspapers out there bring our statutes in parallel with the federal rules and regs in unemployment law, and would encourage your passage of the bill. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thanks, Senator Landon. Are we ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Case's motion, the committee hold rights report, the deuce with a favorable recommendation on 153, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate File 153 is passed committee of the whole. Next bill for our consideration is Senate File 155 of the reading Christian Review bill.
Senate File 155, big game licenses, archery licenses, sponsored by Senator Hicks, an act relating to big game licenses. It was referred to Committee Number 8, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, Cultural Resources, who reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Christius and Kraft and Driscoll. No, Senator Barnard and Burns. Senator Burns, Chairman.
Thank you. Further reading, Bill, what is your pleasure, Senator Von Plater?
Burns.
Excuse me, Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, the misunderstanding's understandable. The reading clerk read that as committee number 8, and in fact, it's committee number 6.
Thank you for the correction. Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the committee of the whole rises to report, do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 155. There is a standing committee amendment, which I would ask to be read in now.
Please read the amendment.
Senate File 155, standing committee amendment number 1, page 1, line 2.
Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, I would move the Standing Committee Amendment, and with an explanation of that and the bill itself, I would ask that you call on the Robin Hood of the Wyoming State Senate.
Thank you. Senator Robin Hood Hicks.
Mr. Chairman, members of the body, just to expedite this, please say aye.
Please, we're on the amendment.
Yes, the amendment's been. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, this does really is really pretty simple. I'm going to go through this really fast. All this does is within the state of Wyoming, you have a general license hunting, and then you have limited quota hunting. Limited quota hunting is in those areas where there isn't sufficient animals for everybody and their brother just to go buy a license and hunt. All this bill does is requires the Game and Fish Department to set aside a portion of those licenses for archery-only hunting. That's what the amendment does, Mr. Chairman. I would ask for an up or down vote on the amendment. The amendment changed the original bill from 10%. Based on testimony that we had in committee and on this bill, it seemed more prudent to leave more flexibility to the Game and Fish Department to determine on what that percentage of archery hunting in each individual limited quota would be. So that's what the standing committee amendment does. It just says the department shall issue a portion of those tags to archery-only hunters. With that, I'd ask for your favorable consideration on the amendment.
On the amendment. Question on the amendment? All's in favor of Senator Burns' motion to adopt the standing committee amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The amendment, that motion has passed. We're back on the bill. Senator Hicks.
Oh, no.
Senator, we're on the bill. Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a question. So if you're going to reserve 10% and all the other people that are trying to get certain Type 1 licenses, is this going to reduce their opportunities by 10%?
Thank you. Senator Landon.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think I know the answer to that, and that's exactly where I was going to go with my concerns with this bill. If I read this correctly, these are in some areas that are pretty difficult draws for our hunters. And what that's going to do is make it even more difficult for our rifle hunters. And I'm just, I don't know. I guess I'd like a little more explanation as to why we're carving out quite a big niche for some specialty hunters. Not everybody's capable of doing this. And so I've just got a little bit of heartburn over this one. Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, I would remind the body that with the standing committee amendment, it changes it from 10% to just a specified percentage, which could be less. And the thinking behind the bill, which actually does make sense, is that archers actually have a lower percentage, lower success rate than rifle hunters do. So you can remove a fewer number of rifle hunters and add a larger percentage of archery hunters in there, and so I'm betting that the reduced number of rifle hunters will be minimal at best.
Okay, thank you, Senator Anderson. To Anderson, 28.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have been archery hunting for quite a few years in Wyoming, and I hope this doesn't increase the archery numbers, because I don't know if you know it or not, but in archery season, you can call these elk, and they come running because they're interested in something that blue pill that Geis has causes them to do. And here you are shooting this poor elk when he's trying to do something, do his duty, and it always seems unfair to me. So I hope this doesn't increase the number. And when we're saying just a portion can be done by the commission, it may be that they would increase the number that are hunting when that fellow is doing his duty as a citizen. Thank you.
Senator Anderson, I have no idea what you're talking about. Senator Christensen.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to get us out of the rut we're in. and you use a... Use an analogy of a county fair experience. We can make more money with this good bill. It's a lot like the Midway. We'll just have more people spending money and less taking home those big stuffed animals.
Thank you, I think, Senator Christensen. Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, if I do recall from a previous bill on silencers and suppressors, I think every time they shoot an arrow, they do have to yell bang now.
Thank you for that reminder. Are we ready for the question? Senator Hicks.
Mr. Chairman, some of the questions do deserve an answer, and let me explain those. Some, that's correct, Mr. Chairman. Let's go through the first part. It did change that to a portion, and the reason that is because the department in some areas already issues more than 10% of those permits go to archery hunters. So it gives them the flexibility. But why the other reason to put a portion in there, there was concerns when you leave it at 10% that may result in a drawing advantage, in other words, that somebody that's an archery-only hunter may have a better chance at drawing these limited quota permits over a rifle hunter. What that effectively allows the department to do is adjust those available archery permits with the rifle permits so that everybody has an equal drawing percentage at those permits. Now, here's the important point, and I want to give you a handout. I was hoping that you guys were fatigued enough and wanted to get out of here that we wouldn't have to go over this. But this really gets to the meat of the question. And I would ask everybody to pick this up. You've got one on top of your desk. And it's the question is, do we reduce the opportunity for rifle hunters? And I think the good senator from Sheridan talked about this. But I'm just going to give you as an example. I'm not going to go through all of these. But if you pick up the one that says bighorn sheep, under the current scenario, in 2011 harvest data, there was 258 bighorn sheep permits in the state of Wyoming. The average success rate was 73%. That resulted in 188 sheep being killed. Okay, that's the current scenario. Go to the next line down. Under the Type 1, Type 9, which is the rifle and the archery permits, if you issued 250 bighorn sheep permits to those rifle hunters, you'd only have to reduce that by 8. If you had a 73% success rate, that would result in 182 sheep being killed. Now, you can take those 8 permits and you can turn those into 60 permits for archery hunters. Go over where it says Type 9. Archery hunters only have a 10% or less success rate on bighorn sheep. So you got 60 guys out there hunting. They kill at 10% success, 6 sheep. At the end of the day, you killed 188 sheep. But here's the important point, and this is really what this is about opportunity, get more people the opportunity to be able to go out and hunt, and that's what that does. Under this scenario, you would see that there's 52 more hunters every year that got an opportunity to hunt bighorn sheep. That's a 20% increase in sheep hunters. That's a good thing for hunters. Anyway, that's just one example. It obviously changes based on the level of success rate. You couldn't move as many of these into an elk season as you can sheep because archers run about 25 to 30% success versus 30 to 50% for rifle hunters. So that margin's narrower, but it all depends on the species. It's left up to the flexibility of the department to determine what that appropriate level is. So it really doesn't change the overall harvest. With that, I'd ask for your favorable consideration of a due pass on Senate File 155.
Thank you, Senator Bebout.
Just one last question. And the way it works now, if you put in for a permit for rifle, you still have the option to go with your bow. So then, but if you put in this way only for bow only, then you lose that other option if you're not successful with your bow to go out and get with your rifle. Is that correct?
Thank you, Senator Bebout. Senator Hicks?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, that is correct. You have the ability to do both now. But by segregating these out, you give more people an opportunity to hunt. Again, it just gets more hunters in the field.
Thank you, Senator Hicks. Are you ready for the question? No. Senator Bernard.
Mr. Chairman, I came out as a no vote in this committee. It's not because I don't think this is a good plan. I think it is a really good plan. But I've had a number of people question this, and I think it, in my opinion, would be a good chance to do an interim study on this. I think there's enough people who don't want this that I'd like to hear more input over the next year. And so this is a good plan. It's well thought out. And all the things you said here are true. It will increase the amount of hunters. Will the game and fish will be able to make more money on this. But I thought that it would be better for an interim study, and that's why I voted for it against it in committee.
Thank you, Senator Bernard. Are you ready for the question? All's in favor of Senator Burns' motion that when the committee of the whole rise report that it is with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 155, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
Senate File 155 is cast in Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 223. The reading clerk, please read the bill.
House Bill Number 223, Public Records, Institutions of Higher Education, sponsored by Representative Brown, an act relating to public records. It was referred to Committee Number 4, Education, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senator Anderson, 02. Senators Barnard, Cole, Landon, and Rothfuss, Senator Cole, Chairman.
Thank you. You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Cole?
Mr. Chairman, I move in committee the whole rise and report to do so with a do-pass recommendation on House Bill 223. Members of the Senate, this bill was brought with concerns with the presidential search that's going on at our only four-year institution, an institution that's recognized more and more every day across this country. Presidential searches at the University of Wyoming is serious business because we don't do it very often. The one thing we do want to do is to make sure that we have a pool of applicants that is the best possible. Now, this has been a confidential search so far. There is a comparison in this country today with the University of Florida.
What's on?
The University of Florida had an open search. This is a big institution, three times as many kids as we have, five or six times the foundation that we have. They had 19 applicants. The University of Wyoming, with a confidential search, had 85 applicants. That's what the concern of the bill is. If you're going to retain confidentiality, people that want to apply will do that, but they don't want to jeopardize where they came from and what they've been doing. In the bill, Mr. Chairman, if you go to the bill, you'll see, I think it says it all in the title, this authorizes denial of inspection of records of applications for president of institutions of higher education and associated records. If you go over to the top of page 2, it says the custodian, this case being the university or the community college, may deny the rights of inspection of the following records. It says an application for the position of president of the institution of higher education, letters of recommendation or reference concerning the applicant, if the records or information could be used to identify a candidate for the position. That's what the bill does, Mr. Chairman. In the committee, we had almost 2 hours of testimony from both sides on this issue, from the press side and from the university side and other concerned individuals. I want you to know that committee number 4 gave this bill a lot of attention. We ended up only working this bill today. We're talking serious stuff here. When you talk about picking out the next president of the University of Wyoming, with that, I would defer to anybody else who'd like to talk.
Thank you, Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and on and for the bill. Ladies and gentlemen, as you listen to the testimony with respect to whether it's the best selection process for the president of the university, as well as the heads of your community colleges, it's a very interesting testimony with respect to what is the best process, what process will generate the largest numbers of qualified applicants, and what process will derive or is likely to result in the most qualified applicant. When you listen to the testimony, and in this instance, the trustees that made the decision to have a confidential search had done extensive training, they'd gone back to Washington, D.C., they had gone through a lot of classes on what to do, and they came away with the conclusion after listening to these classes that a confidential search generates not only the largest number of qualified candidates, but it will more likely to get the best candidate. And the reasons are things that you obviously know, and that is that if you're looking, for example, for candidates that are existing provosts or presidents at other universities, as it turns out, if they put their name out and let the community knows that they are looking for a job, they're blackballed. Their staff, they become a lame duck with their staff. If they've been working on trying to secure alumni's donations, fiscal donations, alumni tend to say, you know, I'm not going to give to a lame duck. So it impairs their ability to raise funding, and it breaks the fraternity relationship between them and their board. So, you know, when you think about in terms of Wyoming, I think if you were a Harvard institution or a Yale institution, and it might be that if you're president or sitting president of a Midwestern college and the word got out that you were one of the three finalists for one of those large institutions, it might not impair your ability. In fact, they might say, hey, you know, the fact that you're even on that list is pretty cool, and we'd love to keep you. But that doesn't fit our profile. Our profile is one where there are a lot of we're trying to recruit people from sister organizations, folks that have proven themselves to be successful, and we're looking for that best candidate. And all of the testimony, all the writings on it, as we're told, are that if you want the very best candidate, the largest candidate pool, confidential relationship or confidentiality is important. And that was the process that was chosen by the trustees. Now, in this case, the Supreme or the District Court, it's not been appealed yet, but the District Court said when they looked at our public records law, they concluded that the way this legislature drafted it, that that there at least was required to be disclosed of the final three. You could have a confidential process up to the final three, and at that point you've got to disclose. When that opinion came out, we had something like 8 applicants. 3 to 4 of them have either withdrawn or said, look, if you go public, I want to withdraw first because I don't know if I'm going to be a finalist or the last one, but I do know that once I hit that list, I'm toast, and I can't afford to do that. So will we get qualified candidates? Well, maybe you do. And if you're satisfied with qualified candidates and not the very best, then the existing process worked. In fact, the testimony from the Press Association was, you know, vetting is great, sunshine is great, and you don't always need the best qualified one, and the risk of getting a dud that you didn't know about that wasn't vetted is sufficient enough that you ought to be happy if you get a candidate. And, of course, they push for the process that would give them more information. When you look at the language itself, the drafters, the bill actually goes into the Public Records Act. And in the Public Records Act, the first provision says when you're required to give disclosure of documents. The second subparagraph B gives the option to the institution or the public, the custodian of the records. And then you have a subsection D which says you shall deny. Now, the shall denies are areas like medical, psychological data on individuals, personnel files, trade secrets, archives, museum materials contributed. So those things are quite obvious. This bill was carefully drafted to say that it's in the may. So in the may column, so that in this instance what we've done is given the decision whether to be open, to provide these, make these open records or not, to the institution of higher education, either the K-12, either the university or the community colleges. So if the next trustees come along and they decide to have an open search or to create openness, they can do that should they choose. And the same is true for the community colleges. When they're looking for their presidents, they have the prerogative to go either way. Faculty staff, the Faculty Senate actually voted by majority to support the confidential process. But there are faculty members that have very strong opinions that they ought to have an input on it. In fact, a couple of the if I would summarize some of their testimony is that they think that they believe that, you know, their faculty, they're trained, they might be able to see defects that we don't see, and they ought to have a role in this. And one of the statements was, look, these are going to be our bosses. We want to have a role in picking our boss. And, you know, as I take a step back and look at it, what I see is that every group wants to have a role in picking the president. I mean, if the legislature, if we thought about it, we'd probably want to pick it, and we could probably pick somebody that we think is the best. Faculty want to pick the president. They'd want somebody who's going to be a nice boss, a good boss, somebody that helps their college or equalizes the funding. They have all sorts of motivations. The press, of course, would like to pick participate in the picking of the president by somebody they think that's aligned with their interests. But what the Constitution says is the trustees pick the president. In this case, the trustees believed that a confidential process was appropriate. Now, in order to get as much input as they want, they went to a cross-section of folks, faculty, community folks. They went to the business community and had them on the screening commission. So they didn't take the entire state and say, look, you can't be involved. Rather, they picked people to make sure they had a broad cross-section of folks that would participate in the selection process. And they think that they've done a good job, and they were very pleased with what they thought was an outstanding group. And, you know, in the end, if they make a mistake, they have to live with it, and they can always terminate the president. So they have all those roles. So when I take a step back and look at it, what I think really the answer is that the folks that wrote the Constitution said the trustees should make this decision. And I don't think we ever really intended that the trustees would have to disclose, or they would not be able to choose confidentiality in their personnel decisions and leading up to this selection process. And I guess I'm uncomfortable with a faculty member choosing their boss. If I was running a Fortune 500 company, I'd certainly want a person that works well with all my staff, a good leader. But I'm not sure that I would have my staff pick the most popular person. And I certainly wouldn't want the press to come in and say who they would like. So you fall back and say, who should the decision fall upon? This says the trustees make that decision. I'd urge you to support the bill.
Thank you. Senator Anderson, 28.
Mr. Chairman, I had an interesting correspondence from a constituent here. The constituent says, why don't we have the last three, publicized like we do with the Supreme Court, the District Court, Game and Fish Director, state legislators, county commissioners, and the SF-104 that we just drew in. And I think the point is maybe not all 80 of them would be announced, but maybe the last three should be announced.
Thank you, Senator Anderson. Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to respond to that. I've given a lot of thought, and I'm familiar with those processes, but let's talk about some differences. In the law field, the way we pick judges, you know, I think I know every judge in the state, and most people in their careers may reach a point to where they're interested in a bench job. I've had partners have reached those points and friends. And in Wyoming, it's a real honor to be a judge. And we generally kind of know those folks. And if they're in your law firm, I've never seen anybody that lost clients because they were said, look, I'm interested in, and they didn't get selected. If you folks have hired attorneys and you had one of your attorneys decided he would want to put his name in for nominating, I doubt you fired him. You just said, if it works, great, I'll find another lawyer, and if not, and it's an honor to have your attorney nominated. That's so the process. And when you look at some of the other, when you look at county commissioners, when you look at state officials, these are honor jobs. And ordinarily, we simply don't see a retribution that takes place. But I'll tell you what, if you know your football coach is searching for a job, you might say, hey, look, don't let the door hit you. If you know your president's looking for a job, you're kind of like, you know, if you're not happy, don't let the door hit you. And the faculty's like, why do I want? So there is a dramatic difference, a large difference between the characters of this job, the folks you're looking for, and it may be that if you're looking for the head of a Fortune 500 company and he said, you know, I'm interested in, well, I'm not even sure of that. If you're sitting on a board of directors of a large oil and gas firm and the board finds out that you have an interest in going to University of Wyoming and they've got other buddies that like to be on that board, you might just find out that you're out. You're not on the board. So it is different. I mean, we're looking at the caliber of people that for them to succeed and for them to do their jobs, loyalty is everything. And looking at another job appears to be, in most instances, a breach of the loyalty. And you simply don't see those same attributes being exploited, or you don't lose your applicant a field on judges and those sorts of things for those reasons.
Thank you. Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, I haven't heard that the staff was going to select it. I think that irregardless of what we do here, I believe that the Board of Trustees is still going to make the final selection, although there would be some input in there if it was public. And I certainly think that they're capable of doing anything as far as weighing that input and the value of it. But I think when I hire a person, that I want to make sure that they're confident and they're capable and they have some self-worth and they're valuable. And to me, if somebody walks in the door and they say, okay, I'm applying for this job, but don't tell my boss, I got a real question about whether that person has any confidence or whether he has any value, any self-worth in his own right, as to whether he thinks that he has the ability to do the job that he's currently doing. And to me, that's the first winnowing process. If a person doesn't have the confidence and doesn't have think that his capabilities are good enough to stay in the job that he's in, why would you want him to come to the university in the first place? Maybe that's where you make your first cut. So, Mr. Chairman, you know, I think that we're really looking to try and solve a problem that I really don't believe exists and maybe enhances the selection process.
Thanks, Senator Meyer. Senator Rothfuss.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On and for House Bill 223. There's another issue that really does matter in this particular situation and the way things have progressed. And what we've done, what the university has done, is make a promise to 88 candidates that we would keep their information and their application private. If we do not pass this legislation, there is no legal protection for that information. We will not be able to keep our word. This is an issue of our state's integrity, of our university's integrity. If you want to go back on that promise, then we won't have this bill. But if we want to keep that promise to these individuals who in good faith trusted us, trusted our university when we made that promise, and we made it in good faith, the university was under the impression, and it was a reasonable impression, that they had the authority through their trustees to conduct a process as they saw fit. They used their judgment, they did research, they investigated, and they determined, after doing that research, that the best candidates would be found by doing a closed search. There was nothing nefarious about it. It was what they were doing in the best interest of the university. And they made that promise, and they had 88 candidates, excellent candidates, come forward. And they winnowed it down to 15 incredible candidates that they were very pleased with, and they were further going to winnow that list down to some finalists over time. And then we got ourselves in a situation where it turned out that they were not within the confines of the previous legislation that we passed a short time ago with regard to public records. Again, there hasn't been a lot of time to experience or to set court precedents on what they could and couldn't do. As it turns out, they couldn't do what they did based on the public records provisions that we gave them a short time ago. This is a remedy to that situation, and this is a recognition that we, the state of Wyoming, should be keeping our promise to those individuals, at the very least, this particular group. Now, if this legislature does not feel comfortable with this process and we want to come back next year or in future situations, that's something we can discuss. But I would certainly encourage this body at this time to hold to the promise that we gave these individuals, maintain our integrity, and protect their interests and their privacy at this time, and support House Bill 223.
Thanks, Senator Rossley. Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, speaking on and for the bill, now this personnel matter, and personnel matters have traditionally been held confidential. That's one of the things you can go into executive session for, and various governing bodies around the state routinely do that. This is a specialized case where it's particularly important if we want the best for our university for all the reasons that we traditionally hold these personnel matters confidential. We ought to do that here and pass this bill.
Question.
Not yet. Senator Peterson.
I apologize to the body. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Real quick. We have a short memory. The last presidential selection wasn't that long ago. You remember the problems that we had, and now we're in the same boat. I would hope our students learn faster than our Board of Trustees, Mr. Chairman.
Thanks, Senator Peterson. Ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Coe's motion of the Committee of the Whole Rise Report to do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 223, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill 223 has passed Committee of the Whole. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that the Committee of the Whole rise and report.
Heard the motion? Yes, you heard the motion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Motion is carried.
Which one are you talking about?
Oh, that's the one I was talking about.
109?
Yeah.
Oh, right?
Yeah. Good one.
Yeah. But you know what? People out here must like it because they're worried about it. Not getting
the reading clerk will read the Committee of the Whole report.
Mr. President, your Committee of the Whole, having had under consideration bills on general file, begs leave to report as follows. Senate File 142, do pass amended. Senate File 153, do pass amended. Senate File 155, do pass amended. And House Bill 223, do pass. Senator Perkins, Chairman.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you. Mr. President, I move I move for the adoption of the Committee of the Whole report.
Heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The Committee of the Whole report has been adopted. Messages from the House.
February the 1st, 2013, from the House of Representatives. Message number 238, third reading, passed, amended. Mr. President, the bill listed below passed the House on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. House Bill number 37, hunting license raffle. Ayes 51, noes 8, excused 1. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk.
Reports from standing committees.
February the 1st, 2013, Mr. President, your committee number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred Senate File 109, Highway and Road Funding Severance Taxes, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Hastert, Meyer, and Perkins. No, Senator Bebout and Dockstader, Senator Bebout, Chairman. February the 1st, 2013, Mr. President, Committee Number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, to whom was referred House Bill 63, State Primacy on Greenhouse Gas Regulation, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Anderson, 02, Senators Cole, Cooper, Hines, and Rothfuss, Senator Hines, Chairman. February the 1st, 2013, Mr. President, your Committee Number 9, Mineral Business and Economic Development, to whom was referred House Bill 62, Innocent Landowner Amendments, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senator, Senators Anderson, 02, Cole, Cooper, Hines, and Rothfuss, Senator Hines, Chairman.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader, that clears the desk.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that the Senate stand adjourned till Monday, May. I guess it's
May.
Not May. How's everybody with that? Let's try February 4th at 10 a.m.
You've heard the motion. Wait a minute. Announcements. Mr. Vice President.
No.
Senator Scott.
Mr. President, your committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, will meet Monday morning at 8 a.m. Normal Committee Room. Senator Case, pay attention. House Bill 86 engrossed, Life Resource Center.
Senator Coe.
Mr. President, your committee number 4, Education, meet Monday morning at 8. And attention committee, we change the order a little bit. Have a little easier day here. We're going to take up House Bill 177, Engrossed Hathaway Success Curriculum, and House Bill 208, Engrossed Veterans Resident Tuition Provisions.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. President. If I, as an announcement, following up on it, there was a question from Senator Scott this morning during our discussion about the PMTF and the 1% statutory diversion. I was I misreferred to a line off a Treasurer's report, and to come back to Senator Scott's question, in 2012, there was 140, the 1% statutory diversion to the Permanent Mineral Trust Fund was $141 million in change. And so I'm just correcting that misstatement this morning.
Senator Bob Flader.
Thank you, Mr. President. Committee Number 8, Transportation, Highways, and Military Affairs will meet Monday, 10 minutes after adjournment, in room S14 to review House Bill 95, Railroad Crossings on Track Vehicles, House Bill 80, Engrossed Healthcare Provider Retention Program Sunset Date, House Bill 92, Interference with Emergency Calls, and House Bill 100, Engrossed Vehicle Registration Fees, Assistive Devices.
Senator Bebout, could you hang on for just a sec to meet with me in my office after we finish here, along with the Majority Floor Leader? Senator Hines.
Committee number 9, Minerals, will meet Monday, February 4th, 15 minutes after the noon recess, to take up House Bill 6, Solid Waste Disposal District Board Terms, and House Bill 55, Surface Mining Operations Exemptions.
Senator Schiffer.
Mr. President, your committee number 1, Judiciary, will meet Monday, February 4th at 8 a.m. in S1. To take up House Bill 14, Crime Victims Compensation and Restitution, House Bill 20, Child Support Guideline Tables, House Bill 21, Engrossed Peace Officer Immunity, and House Bill 23, Engrossed Juvenile Parole Eligibility, if time permits.
Further announcements. Senator Nicholas.
Well, Mr. President, you can thank the early departure on Senator Anderson from Natrona. I've never seen anybody beg so hard.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Senate stands adjourned until 10 a.m. Monday, February 4th.